Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
I don't even really know how to tell you this story, but I was reading through a Twitter thread and it unleashed a Pandora's box that left me going, what? And in a cold sweat.
Well, we always have an odd one in the crowd.
So it's kind of odd.
Decidedly odd.
Doesn't that strike you as a little bit odd?
No, that doesn't strike me as a little bit odd.
It's the Bob and Sherry Oddcast, the stuff we wouldn't, couldn't, or shouldn't do on the regular show. Now, here's the Oddcast.
If you know me, you know that I love the spooky stuff. I like the weird stuff. I like the fringy stuff. I love it. Max loves it too. Lamar consumes it and then quietly goes off and tells his wife, I don't know what these people because Lamar is one of the most decent, straightforward, straight shooting, kind, and smart people that I know, right? But Lamar does not, he's not inclined toward the fringe. And the story I'm about to tell you, I'm going to begin by saying, I don't know. And then I'm going to end with, I don't know. And we'll see where it goes. So
my question
to you guys and Doc too, if he has his headphones on, were you in any gifted and talented program in school when you were children?
No, I wouldn't say gifted or talented. When I was first grade, they had me in a slow class, and then they moved me up to the smart kids class. So I don't know if that qualifies.
Gifted and talented programs, sometimes they're called GATE programs or TD, talent development. They are a very interesting and specific aspect of American public education. How about you, Lamar? Were you in a gifted and talented or talent development program?
In the first grade, I was in the group that didn't wet their pants. I went to the bathroom. So that was good. That was very good.
I'll bet the teacher thought that was a gift.
Yeah, she was very happy because a lot of them wet their pants.
So you were fully toilet trained. Remind me to talk to you about not bragging so much, okay? Because it's off put.
I'm just gonna go and get it. So yes, I was very gifted in the first grade. But now I was in the back when we did it, they didn't have a gifted program, but they put you in like you were in the whatever class or you was in the remedial. You know what I'm saying? So I was not remedial.
At your school, there wasn't a program where a handful of children were removed from the classroom and taken to another location for schooling?
No. Okay. No, listen.
How about you, Doc?
I went to school in Georgia. We were number 49. Our motto was "Thank God for Mississippi." So yeah.
I'm sorry for anybody listening in Mississippi.
They don't care. But yeah, nobody got taken away. No.
Okay. How about you, Doc? How about you?
No, I wasn't in any gifted class in our classes, and I remember being kind of jealous of not being able to go into those classes. I mean, they were not like being transported to some completely different location. I think they were just
they just had
a different set of courses they were taking. But I do remember wishing I could be in that, because that's where all the, I don't know if it was coincidence or what, but a lot of the popular kids were the ones who were the gifted ones.
Well, let me go ahead and say this, Doc. If you are not in a gifted program, there's something wrong
with the program.
The program's wrong. Because I'm here to tell you, I can't.
I'm a late bloomer. You're not. I'm a late bloomer. Right.
Sherry, does it count that when I was in third grade, we had a Christmas program and we had a group of students that were separated out, and one set of students were the students who could sing, and the other ones were the students who couldn't sing, and they all sang. It's just, I was in the the section that could sing. So,
oh my God, between you carrying a tune and Lamar not going in his pants, how is this not NPR?
I know.
That's why you and I are so close, Max. That's why you and I are so close.
Because I remember talking to my parents who watched all of it, and they went, yeah, that other group, they couldn't sing.
Well, I mean, I was in the not singing group. Even though, like Lamar, I knew how to not go in my pants. I was definitely in the not singing group. There you go. So we're going to pause here. And then I'm going to tell you something that I haven't really thought about or put together in any meaningful way in a very long time until I fell into this Twitter thread. And of course, spoiler alert, it's bizarre. We'll be right back.
What is only $4.99 a month but gives you such pleasure? That would be the Bob and Sherry Premium. Exclusive content from the show, including our classic chat room calls and best of CDs. You'll get behind the scenes photos and videos of not only us, but our listeners. It's a lot of fun. Just $4.99 a month. And the website to get all of this is bobandsherry.com/premium.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
So I was born in Philadelphia, and then my parents moved to a little house in the suburbs of Philly on the Jersey side of the Delaware River. And I went to kindergarten first and about a month of second grade before we moved to Wyoming in public school. I didn't go to Catholic school until middle school. So I'm in public school, and in first grade, they began removing me from the classroom and taking me to another classroom with different kids that were from different grades, bigger kids I didn't know. And of course, you know, as a kid, you go along with whatever is happening to you. You don't have anything to compare it to. And so for all of first grade, I only spent part of the day in my first grade classroom and the rest of the day in other classrooms doing different kinds of schoolwork. And there was a lot of we would sit with headphones on and listen to sounds and like an audio book kind of a thing, and then we would take the headphones off and we would do little tests or draw pictures, then the headphones back on, and there'd be like, you know, beep and the headphones and all this weird stuff. And I thought it was cool because, you know, I'm six in first grade, and it was just strange. And then for the first month of second grade, the same thing happened. And then my parents moved to Wyoming. And then my school was normal. There were no special programs in the Wyoming public school system where I was. And everything was just, you know, go to school, you eat lunch, you go to playground, repeat, repeat, repeat. And then my parents split up. And my father took me back east and handed me over to my grandmother. And I was really sick, and I missed probably 2 months of school. And they enrolled me in a Catholic prep school. And I showed up, and the curriculum was wildly out of sync from what I had been doing in Wyoming. The math was different. They were advanced. They were ahead of where I was. And the mother superior, that's the principal, had a conversation with my grandmother, and it started happening again. I started being taken out of the classroom for these other kinds of classes. And I didn't feel I belonged in these other classes because I was hopelessly lost in math and really needed a tutor more than I needed anything else. But the classes that they would take me to weren't regular classes. The one that I most vividly remember from seventh and eighth grade was there were maybe four of us, and we would sit in chairs, no desks, separated from each other by about 6 feet and staggered. So it'd be like checkerboard. Here's a kid, then behind a kid, then another kid. So we couldn't see, like we couldn't look over and see each other, and you were not allowed to turn around. So there, you couldn't see your neighbors, right? Yeah. And the classroom would be dark, and there was a big white screen. And it wasn't one of the sisters. It wasn't one of our regular teachers. It was a special teacher. And all I remember from that class is we would sit there in the dark, and a word, a single word at a time, would flash on the screen, and it would get faster and faster and faster. And then it would stop. They would turn the lights on, and we would take a test. And then they'd turn the lights off, and they would do the same thing. Were single word. And you would be taking it in and being tested on your comprehension. So I asked my teacher, Sister John Elise, what is that? And she was like, oh, you're learning to speed read. I was like, oh, cool. Yeah, I love to read. That'll be great. What a handy skill that will be for me going forward in life. And it was very strange. And it was a couple of times a week. And we would put we'd do the headphone thing also there, but the content was different. It was much more advanced than what I remembered, you know, from first grade. And then it came time for high school. You know, I graduated, and in between, so even though I'd missed a bunch of school, I never caught up in math to this day, but you know, I went on and I won the school spelling bee, and then the state, then the regional, then I went to nationals and blah, blah, blah. Now it's time for high school. And you get called in for a guidance meeting. And the mother superior told me, you're tracked. You're being tracked in one, which I had no idea what that meant. And she slid my class schedule across. And it wasn't stuff I wanted to take. Like you have electives in high school. And this was, again, a Catholic prep high school. You have electives and languages to choose from. And I wasn't allowed to choose. I wanted to take Spanish. They wouldn't let me. There was a bunch of stuff that I just didn't have any choice about. And so I said, well, is there another option? Because I don't want to do this. And the sister said, there's not another option for you. This is your track. This is where your records indicate this is where you go. And I was like, yeah, but I don't think I can do this math. I mean, I can't even do fractions and square roots. And this is like algebra and trig and calculus. I can't do this math. And the nun said to me, this is where your records indicate you go. This is a function of testing in IQ, and this is where you go. And there's no more discussion. And of course, my parents were divorced, and my grandmom was raising me, and there just wasn't anybody to do anything. So off I go to high school, and there you have it. Like, I never had a choice in the matter. And I did okay. But you guys think I'm some like student in the front of the class with her hand always in the air and doing the extra credit.
Yeah.
I became that. I started out that way in elementary school, but then everything went bad in my family, and it was so scary. There was so much domestic violence. We were always hungry. We were always cold. We were always scared. It's difficult to do well in school. And the wheels came off my academic bus. Like, I would never let my daughter see some of my high school report cards because they would be like, Mom, that looks like a D. And it would be because I was barely passing some of these classes that they had me in. I didn't have the foundation for these higher maths and chemistry and these. I just didn't belong in them. But there was no getting out of it. And I just accepted it. And, you know, at the end of the day, it was an okay thing because I got my shit together. And then I was a rock star in college. Like, I recovered my early self and, you know, did my bachelor's degree in 3 years. And everything was great. Everything was awesome. But I never thought about it again, ever, until I'm cruising Twitter, which I will not call X because I just won't. There you go, Elon, do what you will with that. So I'm cruising Twitter, and there's this whole thread about gifted and talented programs. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. I love reading about school. Let me read about this. And then I'm like, oh, Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Oh, yeah, I forgot that happened. Oh, the pink juice. Oh, the headphones. Oh, the weird dark classroom screen. And it turns out, like, there are thousands, tens of thousands of people walking amongst us who were also pulled out of their regular classes and subjected to these so-called gifted and talented enrichment classes. And no one seems to know what it was for. And a lot of people are going, I forgot about that. Yeah, that happened to me too. What was that all about? It was never explained. There was never any rhyme or reason to it. And to this day, I can't tell you what I got from it. And so it sounds like some kooky Stranger Things stuff. But reading through this thread, I was in a cold sweat because I'm blessed with a great memory. I mean, a vivid memory. But I had just not remembered any of that until I'm reading all these people's accounts of what their GATE program was like at their school. And it's just very weird. And I don't know what to think.
Is it possible it wasn't what you got out of it? It was what the program got out of it? That they learned something from it?
Yeah, that was what I was wondering.
Ding, 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 Lamar. And that hadn't occurred to me. That had not occurred to me. My childhood, my early life was so... The first 22 years of my life were so chaotic that, I mean, who could sit and think about anything? But a lot of the people in this thread are saying the same thing you just said, that I wasn't there to get enriched. We were being studied. And that's not a bad thing, by the way, because, you know, the social sciences are important. And were we studying the way certain children learned? Because I remember being tested over and over and over and over again. Reading comprehension, memory, pattern matching. Were they just studying certain kids? Maybe they would pick a certain handful of IQ kids of various ages and genders and socioeconomics and throw them into these programs and then study how they learned, you know, and maybe there's absolutely nothing more bizarre to it than that. But I've been asking people, hey, were you in a gifted and talented or a talent development program in school? And a lot of people say, oh, no, I was lucky I was toilet trained. Like, right. But
it goes back to that.
An equal number of people said, oh, yeah, I was in some kind of thing. And I'm like, what was it like? What do you remember? I don't really remember. And I don't want to ask leading questions like, hey, did you sit in a dark room with a big white screen while they flashed one word at a time really so fast you could hardly see it and then take tests? Because that's a leading question. But the number of people that are like, we did weird things like with headphones and beeps and I've been surprised at it. And when my own children were small, they were both in something that Duke University does called TIP, the Talent Identification Program. And you are invited into it based on, I'm not really sure what, if we're being honest. I'm not really sure. Your grades, your Iowa test scores, your IQ, I don't know. And it was fine. You know, both my girls enjoyed it. It was what it was. They never came home talking to me about being removed from their classrooms, being subjected to weird audiovisual experiences. Like, none of that happened for them. So maybe it doesn't happen that way anymore. But as I sit here and think about it, I don't know. I thought it was just my school. I thought it was some weird Catholic school thing to try to create, you know, a generation of salutatorians. I didn't know that other people were having that. And I didn't know that it was strange until I saw other people describing it. So I would like your thoughts.
I think we're constantly being studied. People are, I just think about you now that we're on the internet, now that we've got phones and all this kind of stuff. I mean, everybody wants our information. They want to know, you know, what do we like? What will we spend our money on? They want to know, you know, what we feel about different things. I think there's probably so much information that it's being, and it makes perfect sense as kids. If you separate yourself from some others, the first thing somebody wants to know is, all right, what makes this different? What is it? Is it genetic? Is it raising? Is it socio, you know, what is it? And I'm sure there's all kinds of information on that.
And I think that probably because it was at a Catholic school, correct?
Some of it was at Catholic. The first part of it was in public school.
Okay.
And then the later part, when my parents split up and my dad took me back east, it was like this program did not exist in Wyoming at that time, but it was flourishing in the Delaware, Philadelphia Valley, New Jersey, New York, Delaware area. And I was pulled right back into it, even though as a kid, the strange thing for me was I knew I didn't belong there. Like I didn't have the tools to be there. And yet they were like, nope, record indicates this is where you go. This is where you go, ready or not.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think there were certain things that in the Catholic school in going there, and I mean, I went my whole time to Catholic school up through high school. There were certain things that they could implement, and they didn't have to run it by a lot of the public education school boards and stuff in order to do whatever it is they were wanting to do. But I have to agree with you. I think that they probably were gathering information on you more than helping you. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I can remember being in fifth grade and they took these tests, and these tests were so bizarre to me, but it was like, they would give you three objects, circle which doesn't belong, you know? I always felt like I was in the circle. I just thought I would throw that in. Anyhow, but they did later, and then they said that they were IQ tests. And I know that I've told the story before. My brother and I had the same IQ, and my brother was a whiz, and I wasn't. And the question was, well, why? He's not trying hard enough. He's this, he's that. And I was just different than my brother, you know?
IQ is such an interesting thing because it's a measure of intelligence, but there's so many kinds of intelligence, right? To your point, Max, because Max's brother is this brilliant engineer. And Max is an artist. It's like two IQs that match, two brains and two souls and sensibilities,
right,
that are completely different. Well, so I've been, you know, kind of like, I love a good, weird, freaky mystery. So I've been kind of sitting with this. So I asked my mom. It's like, Mom, when I was little, what was that where they took me out of class? And my mom said, she remembered it right away. She's like, you were an early reader. You were really precocious. You were reading when you started kindergarten. That's because, by the way, my mom taught me to read. Let's give parents some credit for having some impact on their kids. My mother taught me to read in her lap when I was three or four. So, and when she says I was reading when I entered kindergarten, I mean, I was reading The Cat in the Hat. I wasn't reading Camus, right? But I was an early reader. And so my mom said, in the beginning of first grade, we were given some sort of test, and she got a phone call asking her to come to the school. And the school principal / whatever said, we want to put her in this program that will accelerate her. And my mom was all for it at first. It sounded great, right? You've got an early reader. You want to keep them interested in school. And so my mom was like, well, what does that mean? And they said, well, she'll spend part of her day in first grade with her peers. And then there'll be enrichment for the rest of the day. And so my mom watched me for that year, first grade to second grade. And she said she became worried because I wasn't spending that much time with my peers. And I was already spooky, you know, like even then. And my mom was concerned that it would be so damaging for me socially if this continued. But she got kind of pushed back from whoever at the school. They were like, no, this is what's best for her. Look at these scores. Look at her IQ. This is what's best. And so my mom let it go. And she said, then when we moved to Wyoming, it was like the problem was solved and I didn't have to think about it again. Well, for a long time, Bob and Sherry listeners, when my parents split up, I didn't see my mom again until I was 28 years old. So my mom had no idea that when my father brought me back east, they pulled me right back into that program that she didn't want me in. Mm. She found out about it just recently when I was like, I have to ask you about that thing in first grade. And she was like, oh, yeah, you were done with that when we moved to Wyoming. I was like, no, not exactly. Let me tell you what happened when I got back. And she was as mystified as I was because it made no sense. I can't ask my grandma in black hair because she's gone. There's nobody I can ask what that was. And so I'm just left sitting here going, that was strange. And why can't I find anything? And why don't I know more people who also listen to weird things in headphones and stared at screens in dark classrooms? Like, why didn't that happen for you? Why didn't that happen for anyone you know? Your brother, Max?
Yeah, certainly it didn't happen for me, and it may have happened for him. I don't know. I just know that I was in the group that could sing, and I'm so happy that I was in the group that could sing.
Whatever that was, I just want to apologize to the taxpayers of America because those were your tax dollars at work. And I grew up to be a morning DJ. That, friends...
Sherry.
Is not what the government had in mind when they were trying to do whatever they were doing in those programs.
You're so much more than that, Sherry.
Little did they know where you would wind up.
Really?
It's
Max, was this before or after you recall Stumblebum?
Oh, this was probably around that time.
Around that time, okay.
Oh, this has Making been sure. good for your self-esteem, you know, mister?
Well,
be more like Lamar. Lamar's over here going... Y'all bitches went to some weird schools, but this boy kept his pants dry.
Sure, sure. So Lamar, the reason that I did is I was pigeon-toed, right? And it wasn't until I was an adult, well into adulthood, I went to a doctor and said, you know, I'm looking at your spine here, and you've had surgery on it, and it looks like you had some sort of deformed area in here that probably caused you to walk pigeon-toed. And I said, yep. So I finally told my mother, I went, hey, we sorted out why that was happening. Because they had bought special shoes for me and stuff. Oh, she brought up the special expensive shoes again.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, I went, so I don't know. I'm not sure, quite sure here. He can sing. He's not very bright. He stumbles over himself. And we spent all these money in the shoes, and he's still not walking right.
So Max,
so I'm sorry,
and we would never speak ill of your parents ever. They are like shining examples of everything that is good and right in the world. But I want you to be honest. Don't you think that there was some part of your mom that thought, this kid, we spent all these monies on the shoes and he insists on still walking like that. Like you were doing it. Like you could have been different and you chose not to for whatever reason.
Yes, that is exactly what the message was, Sherry. And I don't – here's the only thing that I can think of, because then you sort of dig under the layers here and you go to – I'm sorry I took us down this road. I am so sorry. I derailed the whole thing. You were talking about education. Now I'm talking – now I need to make copay. No, so here is what the deal is. My mother grew up in an alcoholic home. how things looked was most important to everything. And so she looks at this situation, if something doesn't look right, it must look right. Otherwise, they're going to think something's wrong at the home. Yep. And so that is exactly, I mean, I can deep dive on that and be able to tell you that's where her head was with that.
But you know what? No judgment and all love and compassion for your mom, because she was operating in the rules of the world she was born into, speaking that world's language. And, you know, not only did a lot of people back then roll that way, but we know people right now that roll that way, that it is all about what appearances are.
Yeah.
I
think it had less to do. I think it had more to do with that whole thing. When you find people with alcoholic homes, they're hiding what's going on. And I really believe it was more that than a shallowness of, we don't look perfect. And do you understand what I'm saying there?
Well, look at my house. We were hiding addiction and violence. Yeah,
right.
I know totally what you're saying.
Yeah.
Totally what you're saying.
So, I'm still pitching. I'll post hiking pictures on Facebook and I go, oh my God. Yeah, I'm still pigeon-toed. Yeah, I can see it. Sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You bastard. If you would just make a commitment in your mind. one of the things that this has left me thinking about is, how might things be so different if my parents had never moved west and I had stayed in whatever that was all the way through?
Interesting.
You can never know. Like, your life is your life. And as the great Taylor Swift once said, if it wasn't for your past, you wouldn't be in this magnificent moment right here. So you have to embrace it. But
Sherry, do you think it had a positive effect on you? Or do you just simply don't know? Or do you have some inkling that it had some kind of a positive effect on you?
The thing that I think was most, that weird dark room with the screen, I think that helped me in some way, and not as a speed reader. I think it sharpened, like, you had to pay attention, or you'd fail the test. You couldn't drift. You couldn't blink. You couldn't daydream. 100% of your attention had to be focused on that screen, because the words were coming so fast. And I want you to try to imagine making sense of a story or an essay or a question when you're getting it one word at a time in a dark room. Mm. Picture that if you can. Yeah. It's intense, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that a solid year of that really sharpened my ability to pay attention, which served me well in school. And it taught me how to take things, something that was coming at me very fast, and hold it in my head without losing it. Does that make sense?
Yes, exactly.
That has been an unfreaking believable school skill. But when you look at what I do for a living, now instead of the words coming at me one at a time on a screen, everything is coming through my headphones. Everything. And I have to hold all of it at once and be listening and synthesizing and comprehending and formulating a response really fast. So I would say that whatever that was, I think that probably was a good thing. Yeah.
I think definitely. Probably the best thing, though, that happened for you was your mother instilling the reading bug in you. That goes early. If you love to read, if you're comfortable with books, then it's a lot easier to absorb the knowledge if you're a reader. And
my mother did another thing, Lamar, which is super relevant to the national discourse today. So let me shout Fran out for this. My mom not only taught me to read very, very young, she never censored what I read, which meant I read things that I didn't even begin to understand that were way beyond my level. I was allowed to read anything in the house. I could read my big brother's school books. I could read my mother's novels. I could read the Philadelphia Inquirer. There was zero censorship. And I think that with all this discourse about, you know, what books are appropriate for children and book banning and some of the really terrible fascist bullshit that's happening right now around literacy and censorship. My mother did not censor my reading, and that was her choice because I was her child. You are free to raise your child your way, but at no time should you knock on the door and tell my mother what I can't read. So I think that if you're going to instill a love of reading in children, once you ignite that bonfire, you got to step back and just warm yourself by it. I did that with my girls. I never censored. I have floor-to-ceiling bookcases in my house, and they could pick out anything they wanted to read. And did they understand all of it? No. Like, there were books that, you know, Olivia would come back and she'd want to talk about it because there was symbolism or historical references or whatever that she didn't get. Didn't hurt her a bit. She's about to graduate college. She's fine. But that's, you know, that can be your choice. Just don't be so presumptuous as to think you get to choose for other people and their children. And that's the end of my soapbox on book banning. But again, as a creepy governmental experiment subject, I get to say that because apparently I don't even know what I was drinking in the little Dixie cups and listening to on the spooky headphones. And I have no idea why I was in the dark room with the flashy words. But, you know, here I am on the Bob and Sherry show. So I'm sure the government got its money's worth.
I agree with you about just let them read, because my parents didn't monitor what I was reading. And I'm reading Helter Skelter. I'm reading assassination books about Kennedy and Lincoln. I'm reading – I was obsessed with the Sam Shepard murder case as a child. I'm talking riding my bicycle up to the library and going through those microfiche and then taking the stories and taking dimes and making Xerox copies of things.
But look at what
I read all of the true crime magazines. That used to be a big deal. When I would spend the summers at the drugstore with my mother, there was nothing for me to do. So I just sat over there at the books thing, and and all the true crime and all that kind of stuff. I read all that stuff.
Yeah.
It fed your
curiosity, you know? Yeah. And in, like, in Max's case, Lamar, his doorway might have been the Kennedy assassination. But that door led him down corridors of U.S. history and political history, and then took him beyond that and beyond that and beyond that. Like I said, I'm not coming to your house and inviting your 9-year-old to read Kafka, but get the hell out of my living room and let my 9-year-old do it if she wants to. Like, I think people need to get a hold of themselves. It's like we're devolving at such a clip. It's mind blowing to me. I did not have this on my bingo card for 2024 that we would be even having conversations like this. And I don't know. I just had somebody ask me recently. One of our coworkers at one of our stations said, "Girl, what's your IQ?" And I said, "I really don't know. I have no idea what it is. It's probably in my record somewhere. I've never gone looking for it. I've never taken like an IQ test on the internet as an adult." And even that's a little bit weird. That's like a thing that I'm just like, oh, that's none of my business. I don't need to know that. And yet my children's father's in Mensa and he's real proud of it. He can tell you what his number is. Do you know yours? I don't know. Do you know your IQ?
No.
But you've been tested, right, in school?
I'm not sure what it is. All I know is I kept on being told I wasn't living up to it. So,
well, that's the thing about IQ, because you can have an IQ of 100 and we'll say 140. That's pretty good, right?
Right.
And you're not, quote unquote, living up to your IQ. And you can have an IQ of 98 and be a rock star leader and innovator and manager and creator, because IQ is only one part of the story. just one small part. There's all this other stuff. There's drive and determination and dreams and a work ethic and resilience, the ability to fail and get back up. What is the good of being a genius who can't recover from their first blow?
Sherry, they just did some research that I read about that enthusiasm is more important for your success in life. And I don't mean just financial success, success in all things. Enthusiasm overcomes all kinds of things where you would think, oh, intelligence is the most important thing.
No.
And enthusiasm,
I think enthusiasm is big.
Yeah. And it's just amazing how far people have gone who you would think didn't have a high enough IQ to be successful, and yet they were because of their enthusiasm.
I'm a fan of enthusiasm. I'd rather be an enthusiastic hot mess than a too cool for school genius, for sure.
So I was an enthusiastic pigeon-toed stumble bum who could sing.
Okay. Who could sing? Sorry. And look at you. You ended up on stage.
Look at me now.
Look at you now. And look at Lamar. Sometimes we'll go hours without a break, and he's as dry as a cracker. Everybody, round of applause.
Listen. What good is 140 IQ if you can't control your kidneys? You've got to have kidney control.
I don't care how smart you are. Nobody wants to sit next to you if you got a soggy bottom.
If you're wetting your pants, I'm sorry. It's not. And really, even enthusiasm cannot cover that up. It cannot cover that up.
No, sir, buddy. No. Because we have expectations that past a certain age, like six, you're going to keep your britches dry, whether your IQ is one or 1,000. I'll just close by saying that classroom in middle school, where there were only a handful of us and we were staggered in those chairs, I can tell you what some kids brought for lunch every day. I can't tell you who any of those other kids were, and they were all in my class. Isn't that weird?
It is weird.
Oh, well, let's hope that the mothership comes and gets me before the black helicopters do. That's it for today's podcast, my little gifted and talented munchkins. We really appreciate your listening. Our website is BOBANDSHERI. On behalf of Doc, who's bitter that he wasn't chosen, Max, who's filled with self-hatred but can carry a tune, and Lamar, who keeps his pants dry, we sure do appreciate you listening.
Yes.
We'll see you next time on the Oddcast. Thank you so much for listening to the Oddcast, Talking Lamar and the Bob and Sherry Podcast. We would love it if you would subscribe, rate and review, and share it with a friend on Facebook, Instagram, wherever you go. And thank you again so much for listening.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.